Hey, gang, and welcome back to another episode of the Mr. Friendship Podcast. This is your host, Jacob Andrew Sharp. And I know I say it every time, but we got a doozy of an episode for you, okay? We've got a great episode with my girlfriend's mom, Sondria Brown. This is an episode I wanted to record. I've wanted to do for a while, but there was some complications with my heart during my third treatment, and Eilish's mom was staying with us, and I was hoping I was going to record a podcast with her when I got out, but didn't happen that way, because my fucking heart was beating too fast for no reason. During my third treatment, I was having a tachycardia. So that means that my heart rate was just up for no reason at all. And it was super frustrating because it was like, hey, my body, I already have fucking cancer. So if we could not have anything else go wrong, that would be great. But my heart decided, let's speed it up a little bit. Let's get the energy going. Hey, everybody, who needs some blood? Why are the two things, my heart and my brain, two very vital, is my brain an organ? Two vital organs in my head, in my body. My brain and my heart. Just not doing what they're supposed to. You know, getting cancer and then beating too fast. But, I had to stay some extra days in the hospital. And then, and those were the two most depressing days of my life. Because when you spend 5 days in a hospital getting chemotherapy, and then every morning when you wake up, they tell you, we're going to keep you an extra day because you're having complications with your heart. And you don't get to go home, and you just have to lie there for another day feeling the way you feel. It's awful. I hated it. And I cried. And your boy cried. He cried a lot because I just wanted to go home to my girlfriend, and I just wanted to, you know, lie in the bed and feel shitty at home. Because I'm going to feel shitty no matter what, because it's chemo. And all I wanted to do was just feel shitty at home. But I had to feel shitty at the hospital. And I still, like, we're still, like, my heart rate is, it's a little bit better. But, it's still kind of, it raises when I do simple things like go pee or poo or when I have to go brush my teeth. So a lot of my life is sitting down right now to make sure that I don't have a heart attack during cancer. I wanted to record this episode with Sondria for a while because she battled and beat breast cancer, and she has an incredible view on life, she's such an intelligent and very she has such a cohesive mindset when it comes to cancer. So it's really interesting when I talk to her. She's great. Right now I'm done chemo though. I'm done. It feels amazing. It feels so good to be done chemotherapy. Like it's probably one of the biggest, it's one of the most relieving things most relieving feeling I've ever had is finishing chemo. When I had that last bag, finish, I've never been so excited or giddy in my life to leave. And just to know that I'm not going to have to go through that again. I mean, hopefully. Because the last round was awful. It was just lying in a hospital bed and trying to just breathe through the feeling of throwing up and then the overall headaches or there's a weird pain that comes along with chemotherapy. Like your bones ache. It's so fucking weird. Like I could feel my bones aching. Like, it was almost like I had, like, it's the feeling you get when you do, like, a hard workout or something. Like, the feeling your muscles get when they're exhausted or when they've been worked too hard. But in my bones, you know? God, I'm looking at the camera right now and I look so much like Anthony Carrigan, the actor who has alopecia. I look so much like that guy. For all the casting directors out there, if Anthony Carrigan can't make it to whatever you want him for, give me a call. I'm around. I'd love to do some Anthony Carrigan stuff. I'd love to play a villain on a TV show. That'd be great. So yeah, I'm done chemo. I had to get a blood transfusion during this last round because my hemoglobin is really low, and hemoglobin is protein for the I think it's protein for your red blood cells. So my red blood cells are no good either. They're dying because they're not eating. They need to eat. So that's why I'm constantly pale in the face. But I had to get a blood transfusion during this last round because if my hemoglobin got too low, then, you know, we could have had some really bad stuff. And they basically said the reason my heart was working so hard and why my heart rate was so high because it was working overtime to pump blood to the rest of my body. Which is not like it's nice knowing that there's a reason why it was happening, I guess. But it's not reassuring. Like, I don't feel better about what was happening. I'm still crazy terrified because I don't want to have a fucking heart attack during cancer. So I had my first blood transfusion, and a lot of my family are Jehovah's Witnesses. So if they find out, I'm screwed. I mean, they already don't like me. But now they're really not going to like me. Because blood transfusions are a no-go with Jehovah's Witnesses. So I've basically, as far as they're concerned, I've signed my life away. The thing that will save my life, I guess, will kill me in a religion, if that makes sense at all. It doesn't. It's been a really weird time. But even after that blood transfusion, like, I have a blood test tomorrow, and I'm almost certain that my blood is still no good. Because when I stand up, I get crazy lightheaded and out of breath. 5 steps is like a marathon for me, dude. I can't do anything anymore. Which is kind of nice, because I don't like doing anything. But I can only watch, like, I can only sit down and watch so many, Star Wars behind the scenes or Star Wars theory videos on my phone. I can only lie down and eat so much Cinnamon Toast Crunch, you know? I'm getting a little bored, but I'm happy I have this podcast to help me out. I'm starting radiation now. So radiation will start, I think, in a week from now. I had my MRIs and all my, like, scans to, you know, check up on the tumor, and hopefully everything is going according to plan, everything's working. But radiation, I'm kind of nervous about, because, like, there's a lot of long-term, like, side effects that could happen, which is scary because we are doing full brain and full spine. But, you know, even though there's long-term effects, when you do full spine and full brain, there's a higher chance that the cancer won't come back. And I would love it if when I'm done this, I'm just done it for good. And the cancer is done and it doesn't ever come back. Because it's not invited. It was never invited. And you'll never have an invitation again. Okay? You're not allowed to come to the party. I don't care who you know or who you say you know, but cancer, you weren't invited, okay? I'm starting radiation, and we made my radiation mask, which is like it honestly looks like, I'll post a photo in the video, but it honestly looks like It looks like the first, like, kind of, like, bondage gimp suit. Like, it looks like the first model for it. Because it's just hot plastic that they had stretched over my face, and it looks kind of like this mesh, and then they let it harden over me. And then the mask gets clamped down to the table, and it's something that I have to wear every radiation treatment. It's to do, I don't really know why, and that's probably my own fault. I should probably know why, but it's basically to protect me from the lasers that are going to shrink the tumor. So yeah, it's such a weird mask, because when I have it on, it looks like a shitty gimp suit. Like, it looks like when I have it on that I'm gonna get pegged by somebody. When I'm getting radiation, it looks like I'm gonna get absolutely filled by a strap-on. And I hope that's not true. Cause, you know, I don't want that right now. I want to beat cancer. I don't want to get absolutely filled by a strap-on. I'd like to beat cancer. So yeah, the radiation mask is now, it's all set up and ready to go. And you can't move at all in it. Like, you can't even, like, smile or make a face. It's very tight. You can, like, I can kind of move my mouth, like, I can kind of move my jaw a little bit. But I'm kind of happy that there's no wiggle room, because I know with me that if I could move a little bit, I would. And that probably isn't good. I'm probably supposed to be so fucking still while lasers go into my brain and spine. So yeah, that's what's going on in my life right now. I'm sorry if I'm being so frantic, but I'm trying to beat cancer. So fuck off. All right, I'm very irritable and I'm very frantic, and we're getting through it. But so far, everything's been good. I'm slowly getting my energy back, and I'm eating again, which is really nice. And yeah, I'm back doing the podcast. And this is an amazing conversation with my girlfriend's mom, Sandria Brown. And it was recorded on Zoom, so I'm sorry if for anyone listening, like, there's some like weird audio stuff that kind of happened, because I think whether the internet was bad or something, but it's mostly really a really good conversation. But you'll just hear like the computer just like fucking up. So yeah, enjoy the episode. Like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. And thanks for listening. This is episode 24 with Sandria Brown, and this is Mr. Friendship Podcast. Okay, that's it for me. Bye.
You're doing what now? You're upstairs and just...
Well, I'm upstairs because I figured if I was downstairs, the dogs would start barking when I was...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
If they're going to be at it the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're all set up. We're good to go.
All right.
You feel good?
Oh, yes. Hold on. I got to plug in my... I got to make sure my computer is charging.
Oh, yeah. We don't want it to die.
We don't want it to die in the middle
Very
of
dramatic.
It.
Very dramatic.
Hold on one second. Sure, we're good.
Yeah.
Hold on one second.
Do I look nice and bald? I look nice and bald. Perfect.
You look very nice and bald. Just one second, Jacob.
Yeah.
There we go. Oh, no. Hold on, dear. Technology.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good. So I'm up in the attic.
So you're up in the attic. We're going to record a podcast over Zoom.
Yeah.
With your daughter's boyfriend.
Yes.
Breast cancer. It's a very unique situation.
Yes. So this will be good. I'm excited.
It's great. I'm very excited. I was bummed that I wasn't able to have, we weren't able to do this when you were here. And, cause I had to stay, you know, a couple extra days in the hospital.
Yeah.
And then like by the time I got out, I had basically had the shit. It felt like I had the shit kicked out of me, but, yep. You know, yes. We're able to do it now.
Yeah. No, this is good. This is going to be
good.
I'm excited to talk to you about whatever you want to talk about.
Well, we got, I feel like you and I have now so much more in common because of, you know, the circumstance. But yeah. What's really good is that you and I have gotten along and like are buddies outside of cancer, but then now because of cancer.
Yeah, it's kind of changed the conversation a little bit.
Exactly. But yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, I
wasn't expecting.
I was not expecting it at all.
It's not what I thought we were going to have in common, except first it was my daughter.
Yeah.
Cancer, which I never want to have in common with anybody.
No, it's not a good thing to have in common, but at least, you know, it's good to have, but it is good to have somebody like you who is, who's gone through it. And then, cause you've been my cancer buddy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was lucky enough to have a lot of people in my life, to just share, you know, really everybody's journey is different, but to be able to share those kind of like just little tiny insights that might just help you a little bit.
How you
decide to move forward with your journey, right?
Well, and you know, because I think I've learned that there's not really one main experience. Everyone has a different experience, but that's kind of what really helps everybody, is because, you know, you take bits and pieces from other people and what they've had, and then you go through your own thing.
Yeah, because you can't compare it.
No.
You know what I mean? My journey wasn't like your journey.
No.
You know, your treatment was different. Your cancer's different. But some of the impacts can be slightly similar, right? So, you know, how you think, how the people around you think, how you're responding to them, how you think you should respond, how maybe you are responding. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of other things that go along with getting cancer, because it's not just you that gets affected. It's the shrapnel of everybody in your
life.
Exactly. Right? Yeah,
everyone gets affected by cancer, and it's shocking how many. When I got diagnosed, I realized how many people like have been affected by it.
Yes,
and like with sharing my experience, how many people are like, "Oh, me too," you know?
Okay, well that's though, right? Because like the one thing I learned is that like you need to talk about it, and I'm the type that I don't go inward; I go outward. And so when I got sick, it immediately went outward when I started writing in a blog. Was the first thing I did.
Right.
And something I'd never done in my entire life. And it wasn't that great, but it was a healing vehicle for me, just like you sharing your journey on podcast, right? So.
And that's the incredible thing is that, like what you said right there was like, it wasn't something that you would have done.
Yeah.
But it is something that, that led you to, like, you know, it sucks that, you know, maybe to getting to writing a blog took cancer.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got there and you got to share your journey with so many people, right?
Yep. Yep. So that's what's really important, right? This, you know, I'm an outward person. You're an outward person. My journey is not going to stay completely in, because I don't operate in the world like that.
No. You and I don't like shutting up.
No.
You and I love a good chit chat.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, but, that's why, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Sandra, how old were you when you got diagnosed?
Well, I was 46 on the cusp of, it was in March of 2012. So I was 46 at the time, about to turn 47. And, you know, I come from a generation of 60s kids, and we're really immature for our age. So, you know, it was like getting it at 20, because it was the same thing.
Hell yeah, exactly.
So we were, you know, it was not what I was expecting. And, you know, it was completely devastating to me.
Right. And then so because I don't think I've really asked you about this, but like the events leading up to being diagnosed, because, you know, mine started with like really extreme headaches and then trips to the doctor and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And then, but I don't really like, I'm not really like, what was your life like leading up to it?
So, I mean, you know, I'd been pretty healthy. I hadn't had any big health issues or anything like that. But in the previous year and a half before I got diagnosed with breast cancer, I had a lot of cysts in my breasts, and I was getting infections, like massive, like strep infections in my breast.
Oh my goodness.
So like it would have a staph, there would be like a staph strep infection. Because they used to pull the fluid and check it, and it was sort of mimicked like what a like a woman who was breastfeeding kind of had a mastitis. But I mean, I was 46 years old, my daughter was, you know, 17 16,
right?
So that was sort of the start of it, and it was only because of those infections that I was more aware of what was going on in my breasts and kind of checking them out to see what was going on. And it was a cyst that sat at the top of my breast that I poked at one night in bed, and I could feel just this hard nodule underneath it. And
oh my goodness.
So that's how I found it. I found it myself. Other than that, I'm glad I found it when I did, because.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's.
Yeah. Cause I would have just put it off to being another cyst, right?
Well, and that's the scary thing, is like not knowing when to be like, is it time to, you know, to take this seriously or not?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I had gone to the doctor about all the times, and I, you know, I think as a person operating in the world, like we put a lot of faith, and there's such great doctors out there, but I'll never forget the doctor who was checking me through ultrasound when she looked at my breast one time when I had infection. She just said, you know, if you didn't have cysts, you wouldn't have breasts. And so therefore it just normalized that for me. So I wouldn't think anything beyond that. So that always stuck with me, because I was kind of like, I don't know if that's normal. Like,
yeah, I don't know if that's 100%.
And it was a cavalier statement, you know? And
That's something where like, that's kind of like the first lesson I think you taught me, is like, you know, in those situations, you have to fight for your,
keep asking. Like, something's, you know, not right here. Something's like, not right.
You know, and like, that's so common, where it's just like kind of brushing something off, and then you find out, hey, this isn't normal.
No,
I was right.
Isn't. Yeah. And so, you know, I think, you know, one of the things I learned the most in my cancer journey was advocating for yourself. Like, you know, I've had things since then, and I'm kind of like, well, I don't want to be an alarmist, but, you know, I have had cancer.
Exactly.
And,
right.
And it can come back. So, exactly. You know, I'm always kind of like, can we just check this out? I'm going, no friggin' way. Like, you know, I want to catch it if it's going to come back. You know, I'm
absolutely
not going to put it off to being nothing. So being your own advocate, you know, is the biggest thing. And doctors don't necessarily mean to be cavalier.
No.
But I think they need to be careful sometimes in the things they say, only because, you know, it could mean a devastating diagnosis for somebody. Well, right? Absolutely.
Like, you know, you leave, like, it's crazy how fast it all happens. And then, you know, you push it off a second too long, and that could be it.
Yeah.
That's the scary thing.
I went right away to the doctor, and she was kind of like, well, you know, I'd had a lot of cyst infections in my breast. So she's kind of like, we'll send you, you know, you're probably fine, but we'll send you for an ultrasound. And then as soon as I had the ultrasound, then I had to have the core biopsy. But I, so that all happened pretty fast, but I had a trip to New York City planned. So I did that first.
Nice. Good call.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I shag this. If anything happens, I'll never be down here for a while. I might never get back to New York City, depending on how bad it is.
That's a great way to live, though. Say, fuck it. Like, I'm going.
Oh, I did. I went with a bunch of my friends, and I just said, I asked them if we could push it ahead by like a week. And they did that for me. But I just was kind of like, I don't know what's coming. And I still didn't think I had cancer or anything like that. But I just... Something was nagging at the back of my head. And so,
because you never think that you have cancer.
Well,
until
they actually say those words.
Like, it never really, because you can still, like, I remember having the thoughts of like, you know, what if this is something like cancer? And I would always say, like, in my mind, like cancer.
Yeah.
But it still never really even it still never even has processed yet, really. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you never really, really, in that those before stages, like, you're never ready to hear it. Doesn't matter how much you prepare yourself.
No, and for me, I have to give myself high on the resiliency scale. I was a really resilient people. A lot of people who I loved, like immediate family, parents, and you know, adopted parents, and stepfather, they all got cancer. And in the world, in my world with cancer, they all died.
Right.
They're all gone in their early 60s with cancer, with, you know, cancer that had spread and stuff. So to me, the word cancer only meant one thing. It meant death.
Yeah.
And that is, I think it was the first time in my life I went through the process. I kind of knew something was coming. I didn't know what it was coming. And then she just walked. I remember the doctor walking past the door. And then she wouldn't come in. And then I think she just pivoted, trying to get the courage to come in. And she just walked in, sat right in front of me, and went, "It's cancer." And I went,
"Oh my gosh!"
Oh, I went, "What?"
How dramatic could she be? That's so intense.
Well, I think she just needed to say it, right? Like, I don't, you know, like it wasn't what anybody was expecting, I think, in the process that I had gone through.
Well, I couldn't imagine telling another person they have cancer. I would fucking hate that.
Yeah. And she had been like with me for my GP, right? Because what happens is you do all the testing and then it goes back to the GP. So the GP delivers the news, not unlike your case where it was kind of like everything just rolled down the hill very quickly, right?
There was more time involved.
But I was in the surgeon's office the next day by noon.
Right.
Trying to make decisions about surgery, which was huge.
So they were acting like right away.
That's not always the norm in the world of breast cancer. The thing is that cancers are so different and so unique, right? Like the world of breast cancer. So we say the word breast cancer, but it's like an umbrella of diseases. There's so many different types of breast cancer. There's so many different diagnoses. It's incredible, which is why I spend so much time working on advocating and education. Yeah. All those kind of things, because it's not one thing.
No, it's
brain cancer is not, right?
Well, and that's kind of the crazy thing. It's like, you know, you get put under that umbrella, and then at the end of it, you're kind of like, I had breast cancer, I had lung cancer, but it's also like, but it was completely different.
Yep.
From what all of like these other things that you might have thought it was.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like it's crazy. And I think that's what's so another thing you taught me is like being involved in the community.
Yes.
Is because you have to educate yourself. And you do that by interacting with people and involving yourself.
Well, there's a great deal of fear with cancer. Cancer scares the shit out of people. Because they think of it as one thing. And like in my life, I'll never forget. She said it. And it's like somebody put, I just couldn't hear anything. I don't know what your experience was like when the doctors came in and told you, but it was like a wave just came over me. And every drop of resiliency I ever had in my entire life was gone.
Really?
Yeah. It's the first time I've been brought to my knees, and I'd been challenged on many things during my life. But I have to say that because it just was like I wasn't prepared for it.
And no, God, no.
It scared the crap out of me because right away I thought, I'm going to die. That's it. I'm done.
Right.
And my life is over.
And yeah, that's...
I don't know what you thought, but that was just sort of my initial reaction, which isn't really reasonable at all times, but it was what happened to me, right? So...
Well, I think that's... You were in an even scarier situation because you had to be in the doctor's office and like... kind of the drama of it.
Yeah.
But I was kind of lucky because I was I had Eilish on one side and my mom on the other, and I was at home waiting for a phone call because this is all happening during
COVID.
So like I had just gotten out of the hospital and had like a major brain surgery, and
I know.
I didn't really think much of it. I was kind of still like kind of joking around.
Yeah.
And just been like, hey, we'll find out. And then the doctor told me, but like, yeah, and I like, it was kind of like every, like, it was kind of like I'm trying to explain, like it was like I just heard like a ringing in my ears, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's almost like the world stopped for a second.
Yeah.
You know, anyways, I'll never forget it because my friend Joan says this comment in a video we did together about support groups and stuff. And she just said, when they tell you you have cancer, you don't hear anything else.
No.
Like you, for some people, they just, it's like, I couldn't hear anything else.
Well, yeah, because I had Eilish and my mom crying. And then I was like, why are they crying? I was like, oh, wait. I have fucking cancer. And I think it was in cancer. Those moments, like I was trying to like process it, but I was processing it like half the time, way slower than they were because they were.
Everything happened for you so quickly. And actually in my scenario, it did as well because I left the doctor's office. So I had the biopsy on like a Wednesday or a Thursday and they had the consult on Monday and first thing Tuesday morning. They called me. I wasn't expecting to hear anything for weeks. They called me. And so it was, everything was very happening. And then doctor sent me to a surgeon who got me in 12 o'clock the next day. We sat down, talked about a menu of surgeries I could have. And
yeah,
I was just so completely overwhelmed that I didn't want to have a mastectomy. I didn't want to lose my breast. No. You know, all the things that you're kind of thinking about. And trying to look, all I could think was, I don't want to lose my breast. I don't want them to cut my breast off. What's going to happen?
And that's I assume that's like, that was kind of, that must be the big fear of everyone who is diagnosed with breast cancer, like the immediate fear.
Well, I mean, you know, some people are just kind of like, take them. I don't care. Just get the cancer out of me. But that wasn't my feeling at all. It's everybody's journey. Like, it's devastating to have your breast cut off. And even if you work through all the emotional trauma of whatever that is and you come to a good place and, you know, you come to center about it, and people do, and gracefully. But it's devastating. I mean, it's part of who you are as a woman. And if it means something to you, then it's a big deal when they're gone.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's where the emotional trauma of breast cancer comes in, and why, you know, there's women being diagnosed with PTSD because of breast cancer, right? So it's like, it's,
well, and even like, you know, the physical trauma and the fear of having a major surgery like that, like that's enough where not even close. Like, no one really has to go through that. You know, in a normal life, you don't have to worry about these major surgeries. But then not only are they put in front of you as like this is like what's going to have to happen. And then there's going to be other shit on top of it.
Yes. And I mean, look at you. I mean, it was like a whirlwind, like being a family member in Newfoundland.
Right.
And not being able to I remember saying to Eilish, I'll be on the plane tomorrow. COVID, no COVID. I'm coming. And they were like, no, just wait.
Just wait, yeah.
And it was like, yeah, it's just the surgeries are, and to tell you the truth, I think I had a little bit of a mental breakdown leading up to my surgery. Cause I had about a week and a bit between diagnosis and when they took my breast off and stuff.
Oh, wow. So that's super quick.
It was super quick. Yeah. I had,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. From diagnosis to surgery, it was in a week and a half. So everything happened quite quickly. So I didn't even have time to think, but I remember when I woke up from the surgery, I just had this huge feeling of relief.
Oh my God. Oh yeah.
But it's weird because I didn't want to lose my breast, but once it was gone, I didn't care. And although I miss him, I don't live there. I never did.
Well, and I know that type of relief you're talking about because, from day one of diagnosis to the end, you know, every step is a step closer to saving your life.
Absolutely. Right?
So when that surgery is done, you know, it's that, you know, okay, here's another breath I can finally take. And I think, and that's, you know, taking that breath is obviously, it's not going to bring your breasts back. It's not going to make this any easier, but it's just one step closer, right?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I just went with what had to be done.
Yeah.
And I, it's difficult, but you know, and it's like yourself, right? I mean, they cracked your head open twice.
Yeah.
Do what, you know, like I don't know if everybody, you know, immediate family, but really understanding the level of surgeries that you went through in a very short amount of time.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And sometimes that's just the way cancer is. It just, everything
it's just fast
quickly.
And, but you know, you and I are both kind of in the realm of, you know, they found it at a right time and they were able to act right away. And then, you know, we hope for the best. So then, how long after you got diagnosed did you start writing The Rising? Because
I was started writing that in April. So what had happened was there was another woman in Newfoundland. Her name is Florence Strang, and she was writing a blog called 100 Perks to Having Cancer. And she also wrote she has a book as well. And she kind of inspired me because it was just stories.
Right.
It was just stories. It was storytelling. And I needed to process, and I was looking for a way to process. I'm not a creative person. I'm not, you know, it wasn't my shtick, right, to write or do any of those things. But I needed something, and someone said, "Well, why don't you start writing a blog?" And I was like, "I guess I could do that." And I remember then I was trying to come up with a name for it, and I was sitting in the parking lot of a Sobeys, which would be like a FreshCo for you guys up there,
yeah.
in Toronto, and. The version of Sting at the Kennedy Center Honors version of The Rising by Bruce Springsteen came on. And I was just sitting there sort of in the aftermath of surgeries and everything else. And I was waiting because you wait a long time to start chemo with breast cancer sometimes.
Right.
And I was sort of in that recovery mode and I listened to every word and I just thought, that's how I feel. Like, that's how you feel like you need to rise back up because you have been just deflated by cancer. So I was like, that's what I called it because that's how I
absolutely.
Felt.
Absolutely.
I love the words to the song and it, you know, it just inspired me in that moment. So that, yeah. So it was soon thereafter.
That's incredible.
And I blogged every week and I'm not a great speller for all the editors out there, but I think.
Yeah, but
overall,
who cares? You had fucking cancer.
Yes.
Who cares?
And I did spell check, but you know, I could use an editor, but I went back and I would read some of the stuff that I wrote. And I remember sitting at this, I'm on the same laptop. And I would just be like, so inspired just telling the story. And I would just want to, because for me, my mother died of breast cancer and I didn't understand the disease. So I wanted to write about what it was actually like, because if I had understood it a little bit better, maybe I wouldn't have been so afraid when it happened to me. So you know what I mean? Like, that was my thought process, that, you know, I need to tell what the story's like, because I didn't really understand my own mother's story of breast cancer. So I figured, you know, talking about what it feels like when you're waiting for friggin' doctor's appointments and what it's like when you're waiting for test results or, you know, for those phone calls, or what it's like to go through chemo, what it's, you know, all those kind of feelings that you experience.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to write about them because my mom didn't really explain them to me and I didn't really ask enough questions.
Right. So then that must have been like a really emotional part of it, is having that kind of connection afterwards.
Yeah.
With your mom.
Yeah. So, you know, like it was good. It was good to write, and it was good to because writing helped, like you talking helps you process, right?
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing, you when you're going through it, you know, you're almost, everyone's kind of in that fight mode.
Yep.
And you're kind of almost shut off. So you need these outlets to kind of talk about what's going on, because it's
And I was, and you know, I'd been I was doing that, and I was drawn to the support groups. I had gone to a breast cancer retreat, and I was getting inspired by these women. Because it was all women that were there. And men do get breast cancer, but it seems the majority are women, and women in times of need gather and offer support. Yes. And that's what I found, and that's what I needed. It's not for everybody, but there's great benefit to finding absolutely your tribe when you're in trouble.
And then did you find a lot of support through the writing, and like, were people responding well? And like,
yeah, I was getting messages and everything, and people were like, I used to put it on Facebook. I didn't have all the, I wish I had more platforms back then, but there was no Instagram or other stuff. And, you know,
it was just Facebook,
and people weren't, you know, I wasn't videotaping it. That was one thing I thought I wish I had done. There was moments I would have liked to just took the camera and went, this is how I'm feeling right now. The writing, and you know, I stopped writing about a year and a half into it because I was in my mind healing, and who wants to hear about all the crap that is now on the other side of it? Because all the traumatic moments were kind of getting done, and then I kind of stopped writing because I didn't think people would want to hear about how difficult it is to recover.
But I think they would want to know.
Now in retrospect, I know that, but I, at the time I felt like I was whining because what happens with cancer, and you, Jacob, you'll know this firsthand, is that you will move to a place where everybody's going to go, oh, Jacob, you look great. Jacob, you're doing so well. And inside you still feel like shit. So
I'm three days out of the treatment, and I'm done chemo, and I can really still feel the poison in my body. Like,
and you will. It's going to take months. Yeah. Oh, it's going to take. It took me 3 years before I felt like somebody lifted a heavy blanket off me from the chronic fatigue and stuff. So I mean, it does have its toll, right? It really takes its toll. And in breast cancer, a lot of women do post treatment with aromatase inhibitors and hormone blockers and stuff like that, which cause a lot of problems. So
yeah,
but yes, writing that blog saved me.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it like did. Because I know you and I have talked about a little bit, like, you know, you doing kind of a podcast version, or, you know, I think it would be, you know, even if you were to talk about, like, you know, the last how long has it been since you were?
So it's been 8 years.
Wow.
But and you know, there's organizations that are putting stuff out there on the internet, but the thing that will help people heal the most are the stories.
Absolutely. And
the most
important
thing you can do is listen to someone's story and their particular journey, because that's where the power comes from, right?
And, you know, it's for people to not, you know, there's people who have messaged me after I released the episode about my diagnosis. They were like, you know, they're like, I have cancer and I haven't told some of my friends. And I had like, and I'm like, you really should. Like, that it blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, you know, it'll help you more than anything if you tell them. Like, and it put it in perspective for me that like, how hard it is for people to talk about it. But the story, you're right, is the most important thing.
Yeah, the stories are what help people heal.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, it's what helps people understand and what to do. Like,
yeah, and maybe connect with other people with a similar journey. Yeah. Like, you know, the women that I hang out with, like, if I have a question, I can send a message and get an instant reply from somebody.
Yeah, of
course. The information that I need. And what's that empowered me to do is help other people. Like I, you know, I've had people reach out to me when they've been diagnosed and we've chatted about what's going on with them.
Right.
So it's like, it's this kind of cumulative effect of, you know, of giving and sort of, and then hopefully that person will reach out to the next person and help them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. You got to hope for that trickle effect, just because it's a, well, and like I hear it all the time where, you know, someone says, you know, I don't know what to say and I don't know what to do. Like, you know, and it's, and it, you know, it is on like the person who's been diagnosed, it's on you to kind of tell people, you know, what's up and what, like, no one will know what to do or say. There's nothing really you can say, but it's,
there's nothing they can say.
There's nothing you can say that'll make it easier, but it's, there is always stuff that you can do though that helps. And like, and I find that always comes from the people who have been, who've been diagnosed or who have had it affect them. Like, you know, you have to talk about it, or else no one will learn.
And some people don't want to talk about it. Like there's a lot of people get diagnosed with cancer and they just want to get the treatments done and move on. And that's to be respected as
Absolutely.
But there's a large population of people where that's not going to work. And because like, say with, I don't know what's going to be like, what your journey is going to be like now in the healing, but I know in the journey of healing of breast cancer, with the devastating effects, like yourself with the chemo, the devastating effects of the drugs they give you after,
right?
The devastating effects of the scars from surgery, the loss of your breasts, the loss of, you know, for some women, you know, their sexuality, their femininity, their this whole psychological game. And what you'll hear people say is that it's the after that's most difficult.
Right.
For healing, because it's like when you're just going through the treatment, you're just going like a steam train and you're just getting through it. But then after, it's almost like you're left in the rubble. And it's like trying to explain to people what that's like is very, very difficult.
The PTSD of it is like, that's got to be the,
you know, they did. There's been some diagnosis with women because women are traumatized afterwards and there's an expectation to get back to normal. And you just don't know what normal is anymore. Like, what is normal?
Yeah, there is no norm. There's no getting back to whatever it is. No. Like, it's because now I realize in my life there is a time before I had cancer. Yep. And then there will be a time. And then there's only time after that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's.
I mean, are you having any, like, I had a lot of cognitive complaints from my chemo. So, you know, I had severe memory issues and, you know, I felt like somebody had given me a slight lobotomy at times, right?
Yeah.
From the chemo, the drugs had impacted me. So there was a lot of stuff like that that people can't see that impacts you on a daily basis.
Oh, 100%. Like I'm basically right now, like this is the big event of my day, is sitting in a chair and talking to you. And then I go back to staring off into space, lying in the bed, eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch for the next until Eilish gets home from work. Like it's just a lot of like chemo has made me just want to really in the best words, do nothing. And I mean seriously, do nothing. Like it's not, I can't even watch like new television or new movies. Like it has to be something that I've already seen so I can zone out of it and just lie there.
Yeah. I understand that.
It's crazy.
It is.
It's crazy.
And you can't really explain that to people who haven't been through chemo because it's like the cure sometimes is definitely worse than it feels worse than the disease at times because it's so powerful. Those drugs are so powerful.
Yeah.
And the impact on not only the brain but your whole body and the neuropathy and everything else it does to you is just unbelievable, right?
And it's so like it's so weird the way the type of sick that it makes you is like, yes, it can be explained in like nausea and fatigue, but you know, there is no, you know, there's no side effect that specifically says you're going to smell pizza and then you're going to go sleep for 16 hours and you're going to try and not throw up.
Yeah.
That's,
Did you when you went in for your last round, what was going through your head when you got a?
I mean, going through my last round, I was, it was like such a bittersweet moment. I was really like excited, like I couldn't wait for it to be done, and then I was also just like dreading going back. It's because I knew what was about to happen to me, and I've had it. I already went through three rounds, and I knew I was just going to lie there and feel sick for 5 days. But it was a little bit easier this time just because I knew there was an end.
Yeah.
And I could feel that end. And I remember thinking like at first that, oh, when I finish chemo, I'm going to feel like so happy and relieved. I'm going to feel so great. And it's going to be like this big ceremonious day. But all it was like, I felt really, really shitty. Excuse me. I had gotten my last bag. And then like, I kind of just like walked out of the hospital. And then Eilish and my mom came and picked me up. And it was like, and you know, there was some nice moments there. But then I got home and I really just went to bed. Like there was yeah. no big like
because it's not over,
fist in the air.
Yeah. Yes, it's not over because the chemo bag finished dripping into your veins.
No, like it's going to be, and it's, everything's going to be still going for months. Like I'm going to still feel shitty for a long time.
Yes, that's true. You are.
And I'm still going to have nothing on the top for a while.
You know what though? My hair, a few weeks after chemo, I started getting sprouts.
Really?
Oh yes. Cause I had, yep. I think
now, would you get like little like patches or did it come back full?
No, it came back full.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody's different. Okay.
Right.
So, and, but it's like, I was like maybe, you know, 3 or 4 weeks after I was like, you know, didn't have to shave my legs or anything. And the next thing I was like,
nice
head again. So it came back. Oh yeah.
Well,
that's not the experience for every person, right? Like everyone's different. So it's like, that's hard to say. I was fortunate enough that my hair couldn't wait to get back out.
Well, I am not excited for my bum hair to come back. I'll tell you that.
No, okay. I'm not talking about my bum hair. No,
perfect. Okay. Well, I thought that's what we were talking about on the Mr. Bum Hair podcast. I have, because you were involved with quite a few, projects, during and after your cancer. The one I was really drawn to, and I think seeing it when I first got diagnosed, like, really made me feel emotional and made me feel inspired. It was an art project, like an art installation that you had done with an artist named Malin?
It's Malin, yeah.
Malin.
Yep, she's a artist. She's a Swedish Newfoundlander, and she's an amazing artist.
Yes.
I think I was in between. So I had my first round of chemo on May 30th in 2012. So it might have been around the time of my second round of chemo.
Okay.
But of course, I was looking everywhere for inspiration, and I had seen women had taken pictures of themselves, and there was a project in the States that was kind of inspiring, and it was just pictures of the women and their scars. And I saw that, because you know some of the scars are pretty dramatic.
They're pretty dramatic.
You kind of get a sense of why women are traumatized after breast cancer.
Well, because you know your part of your body is just, you know, mutilated, like it can be awful.
Yeah,
those surgeries are
terrifying. They're tough, but the stories within those scars are amazing because they're stories of resiliency. So I knew Malin because she was friends with friends, and I'd gotten to know her, and I considered her a friend. And I knew the type of artwork that she did. And whenever I saw her pictures, they were always, there just was life in them, and there was just, there was something in them. She caught the moment. And so I asked her to come and photograph me. And so she just came over one day, I think it was like a weekday. It was a beautiful sunny day in July here in Newfoundland, which is unusual.
Yeah.
And the sun was shining in the garden. And we just went out in the backyard and took pictures. And she caught some amazing photos. She created some amazing art that day of me. And I remember when she sent me those pictures, when she had them done, she sent them to me, and I was like, this is exactly what I needed. I needed to have that picture taken to see that I had some sense of self left, that I could be who I was as I am now, because I wasn't the same person anymore. Right. So, you know, So she took those pictures. They were amazing. And I had a conversation with her, and I said, how would you feel if we asked other women for you to create art with other women? And so she agreed, and we agreed that we would look for so many women. And what we did is we photographed, I think she photographed, I think there's 13 of us. And the women that we gathered, we didn't, like, I knew a couple, but most of them I didn't know. They just sort of came and heard about what we were doing. And we had some media, and we did some interviews and things like that. And she would ask the women stories, and she would learn about them first,
right,
before she ever photographed them. And then she let them choose the place where they wanted to be photographed. So some of the beautiful art pieces are done in all around the outdoors in Newfoundland. So like, cool, Signal Hill and Fairyland, and just beautiful places where the background is amazing. And she took these pictures, and at the end, what she had was an art installation. She had created enough art, and we called it 1 out of 9, because at the time, and I'm not sure if this has changed, and if it's changed, I have to do my research on this, that the statistical reporting is now 1 out of 8, which means we've gotten worse, not better. But at the time, the stats were 1 out of 9 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And that was in 2012. So the art exhibit that she created is called 1 out of 9. And I sort of supported it in helping find the women and doing some of the liaison. And we had the Cancer Care Foundation in here in Newfoundland, the Dr. H. Bliss Cancer Care Foundation, heard what we were doing and saw some media that we did around it and offered to help support us. And they helped get that art installation done. And we hung that in a gallery here in St. John's for 10 days. And we had a big opening, and it was amazing.
That's incredible.
And then we took that art exhibit right across Newfoundland and Labrador, and we hung it across Newfoundland. And that, it sits in boxes waiting to come out and be installed so people can see Marlon's incredible artwork again. It was
like the way you described, like, needing to see a sense of yourself still, and like kind of seeing that reflection and like the beauty like held up, like that's kind of the best part of what that can do for people.
And you know, when you use the word, like, so beauty is something that is internal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is something that should come from within, because breast or no breast, you can radiate. And so for these women, the healing part was, and for myself, was the healing part of just actually seeing that photograph, of seeing that piece of art that reflected your story, and that you were resilient. And, you know, some of the women in the picture have metastatic disease, which means their breast cancer has spread, you know?
Right.
And we had women from 31 to 82. So we had this, you know, breast cancer used to be seen as an older women's disease, but we had all these young women involved with the project that were young and old, because it doesn't discriminate.
No. Hey, look at me.
Yep. Yeah. It doesn't discriminate.
Doesn't give a shit. It doesn't matter how old you are, who you are. No. It'll get you.
Yeah.
But so,
all those things that you do and participate in are part of your healing, right? Like, I needed that to find some kind of self-acceptance to be able to move on.
Absolutely. And then have you guys, you know, revisited that piece of work at all, or have you?
Yeah, we talk about it. So Malin and I talk about it, not frequently, but we still have all that artwork sitting framed in storage. And we have a little bit of money, because we did a small fundraiser to get it framed, because it was, I think there's 29 large installation photos or like art pieces, and then there's a bunch of small ones. So it was a lot of money to get it all framed. So we still have a little bit of money left. And so our dream is to see that hang again.
Absolutely.
And
I think that'd be incredible.
Because it's just as powerful today as it is when it was created, almost 7 years ago. So
I think that that type, I think it holds, well, it'll, that type of, those images and that, the sentiment of that artwork will, like, that'll be meaningful for forever. Because I think, you know, even I was able to relate to it, like, on a really heavy level, even not, you know, not having breast cancer, but, and being a man, but, like, you know, having scars and having your body change and, like, you know, and then, like, you know, trying to find that, like, that love and self-confidence after all of it is, like, you know, it's extremely hard, but, like, that type of imagery is what helps people.
We have the tagline that, you know, I think it's every scar has a story, every story has a scar.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's about people talking about what's happened to them and sharing, sharing whatever that looks like, because it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes breast cancer has a bit more of a broader platform because of the way it impacts you physically.
Mm-hmm.
If you've had mastectomies and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, the women in our group, some of the women in those pictures still have most of their breasts, but the impact has not changed. And the same for you, right? Like, so what's it going to look like for you? Like,
you know, I'm like, right now I'm kind of at a point where, I basically haven't moved in, like, what feels like 3 months, and I'm just getting softer by the day, and it's like, it definitely sucks, but you know, there's no real other option besides lying there. And it's like, you know, it sucks because, like, there's days where I'm like, this is not the way I want to look, but I literally have no other option. And
the art of convalescing is an art.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
the greatest gift, I say this to everybody because I kind of pushed myself a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody I know that just sort of starting maybe a journey, I'll say, just give yourself time.
Yeah.
Like, don't rush it. Don't feel like you've got to be 10 miles ahead when you're really not there, because you will regret it.
Absolutely. And, like, you know, to the people who can, you know, go a million miles a minute, whether during treatment, that's amazing. And, you know, the people who are able to keep up their, like, their running and their, all their stuff, like, that's amazing. But, like, for myself, I have to sit down to brush my teeth. Like, that's the reality. Like, everyone is affected differently, and I'm sure the journey afterwards of getting back to where I want to be with my own health and where I want to be with my body will, you know, that'll be a separate thing. But right now, you're right. It's about, like, just giving myself time and,
I'm sick. I'm a sick boy. You're sick.
I'm a sick little guy.
So the hard part is that, you know, your life will be there whatever way you need it to be there when you're ready. And that, so, like, you know, like the stories, like myself, I went back to work. I'd had, you know, my mastectomy, rounds of chemo. I decided I wanted reconstruction before my EI6 ran out because, you know, you gotta rush things. And I did that.
Yeah.
So I had a lot go on in the span of 6 months.
Yeah.
And I paid the price. And then I went back to work.
And I you went to work right away.
When
it was done.
No, I finished in August, and in, so it was about 2 months. Then I had reconstruction surgery, which is not for the faint of heart. So let me tell you, it's a lot. It was a lot more than I had anticipated it was going to be because I had, it's a lot of work that they do on your chest and stuff. And then I was back at work within like a month and a half. I was trying to go back to work, and I realized, you know, like you say, you got to sit down to brush your teeth. I used to, it used to take me so long to walk up the steps to get to the office because I'd be winded. Like, I'd be winded. I had no energy whatsoever. And
the type of fatigue that it is kind of like, it's almost like, it's so hard to explain to people because it's
you want to cry sometimes.
Oh yeah. Like, I was getting out of the bath today and I literally had to sit down on the bathroom floor because I was so overheated and I was so like exhausted from standing up.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and I was so frustrated because I was just like, just stand up, like you're fine. But I literally couldn't.
No.
There was nothing left in the tank, which was so strange because I was like, all I did was lie down in hot water and then stand up. And that was too much.
Yeah. And sometimes you're okay for a little while, but then you realize that you're not okay. I remember I went to out this place called Woody Point after my treatment was done with a couple of girlfriends thinking, oh, this will be really good for me, blah, blah, blah. And we were in a concert with Alan Doyle or someone like that was playing.
Yeah.
Like someone really good was playing. And I remember there was just like this like blanket of illness came over me. And I looked at them and I said, get me out of here now.
Absolutely.
And then I just went in the fetal position and didn't talk to anybody. Yeah.
And then you just stare into space because that's and all you can do.
Yeah, that's it, right?
It's
so
it's a horrible feeling, but when you go through it, you have the most amount of empathy and like understanding for the other people who are going through that.
Yeah. And everybody knows that they're going to get better, but you have to give yourself time and place to do that.
Yeah. Well, so because there's also like, there's, you know, I would love to get back to like exercising, but I literally can't right now because of my heart.
No. The best you can do right now is try to walk around the block.
Yeah. That's like the most I could do. Even that makes me feel tired. Now, Sandra, you've been involved in the breast cancer community now for, I guess, 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I got involved right away. So that's been a blessing in my life.
And I guess part of this, I didn't realize that it went from 1 out of 9 to 1 out of 8 for statistics. That's crazy.
I'm not sure if that's official or not.
Okay. So
because I heard it, I thought I saw the stat on the Canadian Cancer Society in this last 6 months or something. So my head, I was like, geez, has the stat changed? Because if it has, that's not a good thing.
No, that's a really, really not, that's not a good thing at all. That's
no. So I have to check on that because that kind of scares me that we're moving backwards.
Now, but in, you know, I'm sure you've seen the not only the cancer community, but the breast cancer community specifically, I'm sure you've seen it change over the years. And like, how have you seen it change in really positive ways? And like, is there any way like you've seen it change in your own life?
What do you mean by that?
Like, I mean, like since from when you started and like, you know, being in that kind of moment of like not knowing and being someone who had it and then being on the other side of someone who's now supporting and you know trying to help people who are diagnosed, like
so the thing is always sort of sharing the information, like, you know, making sure that people are getting the information. We did used to have the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. Now they're rolled into the Canadian Cancer Society. But there is the Canadian Breast Cancer Network that now exists, and they're giving out a lot of great information. But the need for support is about the human spirit. It's about the need to have people around you that are going to let you know that you're probably going to be okay, but this is probably what's going to happen. And so that need hasn't changed. There's still a lot of women getting diagnosed with breast cancer, a lot, right across Canada. And so people are still reaching out for support. It's been hard with COVID because you can't do what you need to do, right?
Oh, like it's crazy. Like, you know, the amount of people my experience was different because I was inpatient for my treatment. But like, you know, even from what I've seen being in the hospital, excuse me. I burp so much now.
That's okay.
Oh, but like being in the hospital and seeing the way, you know, COVID has affected the way people get their treatment and the way it affects, you know, how people meet with doctors and how, like, the entire process is completely changed.
Yeah. And I don't know anything. I have a close family member that's going through breast cancer treatments right now, along with you. Like, so there's, and, you know, having to go do your treatments by yourself, and, you know, that part is hard on you and the patient. It's hard on the family, you know, like, not to be there. And that emotional support, even for you or for anyone else, like, it's kind of nice to have someone there talking to you or going to Tim's to get you a coffee or, you know, just sort of that take your mind off and talk to someone about, you know, the stuff that's going in your arm and curing you and making you sick all at the same time. So those kind of supports are kind of out the window right now.
And that's the big thing with, even though there's a pandemic, cancer does not stop.
It doesn't care.
It doesn't care. It's still going. And, like, you know, that's the harsh reality that's added on top of, you know.
It's a double-edged sword, because this whole COVID has made everything, it's like you feel everything 10 times more.
Yeah. You know?
Like, things that 100%. Might have happened in the past seem to have this compounded impact emotionally on, on yourself and for those around, because you're slowed down enough that you're just absorbing stuff so much more.
Absolutely. And I find that I'm so much more like, at least, like, you know, when I have the energy, at least, like, I'm, like, so much more emotionally charged, and I'm so much more I'm much more I perceive things I'm much more susceptible, or is it perceptible? Susceptible to things that are happening.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm much more locked in now emotionally than I have been in a long time.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear, though, because sometimes people turn off, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so, that might be because of cancer. It might be because of, who knows, right? But.
Well, it's probably a combination of the both.
Yeah.
Have you been sad?
Not sad. I mean, like, there's times where I'm like, I feel frustrated really easily. Like, I'm definitely irritable a lot. Like, my irritability is kind of through the roof, which is not good. Like, I don't mean like I usually don't have a temper at all, but I just get like, I think it's more of when I'm on my phone and I see things online, I get really frustrated really easily.
Oh, okay.
And then, but I find like, yeah, I think like I cry a lot. I'm crying at everything now.
Okay.
Like, that's not so much like, I'm not like sad. I think I'm just like,
emotional.
I'm just very emotional. It's raw. And, you know, I think that might be like parts of those, parts of like the fight mode, just kind of like either like slipping away or at least like cracking a little bit. And like, when I was supposed to be crying, when I found out I was diagnosed, maybe that's kind of slipping out now a little bit more and more, you know,
and being a bit more vulnerable, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If that makes sense at all, but,
that does make sense.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to like to explain or even like wrap my head around, you know, that like I know that there's this like emotional thing inside me that you know has affected me and is currently affecting me, and it's something that I haven't been able to address yet, and it's something that like even if I tried to, I won't be able to until it's over.
Okay.
You know, like, it's like, I can feel that, I am still in that mode of like, go, go, go. And until radiation's done, I feel like I won't have that like big cry until
it's all done,
you know, until it's all done.
Well, I can understand that. 'Cause like you still have a bit of a slog ahead of you yet, right?
Yeah. I'm like, we're like halfway.
You're like halfway.
We're like halfway. It's all good.
You're like
we're
halfway.
Done chemo. Radiation starts soon. And then
I know. The time has gone so fast though, because like I feel like we've all been in some sort of vortex.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't, none of it feels real. It all feels a little strange.
Absolutely.
But the only thing I can tell you is I'm 8 years later. Cancer is still a big part of my life because I include that in everything I do. And the women that came into my life 8 years ago are still in my life. And they are some of the strongest women I know. And
I love that.
They're the emotionally supportive, and they, so I, you know, I can't, I mean, all I have to do is look at my body every day and I have a little memory of cancer.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's not like it's ever going to go away.
No.
But you know, to make it easier, I have those people, and you know, we all look the same a little bit underneath. So it's like, you can, I have this support system, and you know, you're in the midst of it, in the shitstorm that is cancer treatments right now. And, you know, I wish I could project you to where I am, because it's, you know, I started off a premenopausal woman and now I'm 55 years old and you know, I'm healthy and I'm doing well. And
100%, but that's, but you being like that kind of cancer mentor for me,
yes,
has kind of like, you know, in a way projected me into like that mindset of being like, you know, the best piece, the best thing that anyone's ever said to me is when you said this too shall pass. You know, this is only for now.
It's not forever.
It's not forever. And like, you know, that has been the biggest thing in the back of my mind during all this.
Because the thing is, Jacob, you won't leave it behind. It'll always be part of your journey now. It will always be a point of reference for you. It will change how you see the world. It changed how I saw the world. It'll change how you approach the world. And if, you know, there was gifts that the journey of cancer gave me. Now, I was never gift. I never felt cancer was a gift itself, but the things that I learned from it and the people I've met, the things I've learned from them, those are my gifts. And that's what I carry with me. And they're what keeps me going. And my gift to myself is not to lose sight of what I learned about myself. Cause I learned a lot about myself when I got cancer. It was like a little bit of rediscovering of potential and ability, and, you know, and sometimes you feel that slipping away because you just kind of get caught up in life again.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are little gifts the universe are giving you if you choose to engage.
Exactly. You know, another thing you told me is that, you know, I'm going to be different after this.
You are going to be different.
And, you know, accepting that and you know, letting that happen is very important. And
and that's a good thing, you know, if you evolve with the knowledge, and take it and just be who you need to be, right?
Yeah. That's exactly.
Anyways, so
whenever I talk to you, it's always like talking to a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah. I'm not that smart.
Yes, you are. Yes,
listen,
you are.
I had to do a lot of digging deep when I got diagnosed, because as I told you, when she walked in and looked at me and told me I had cancer, the first time in my life I was brought to my knees, and I had lots of opportunity to be brought to my knees before that, but I couldn't cope.
No.
And my gift to myself and what I had to do for myself was build myself back up.
Right.
And by doing that, I let the world in. By letting the world in and learning and being a sponge, and absorbing, I managed to heal, and I healed better because of all that. So
unbelievable.
Waiting.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And all the nausea, but it's all good.
And also, I didn't have the nausea like you did. They gave me good drugs and I didn't have the shitty drug that you had. So like, I had pretty bad drugs, but
I just found out that the reason I'm not allowed to have stronger drugs is because the ifosfamide, which is one of the chemo drugs,
yeah,
it reacts really, really poorly to heavy sedatives.
Oh.
And because so many nausea medications are so sedative, I can't have them.
Oh.
It can cause tons of like organ failure and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, so excellent. I was like, that's excellent.
And I was like, well, thanks for telling me, guys. Perfect. That's good to know.
One of the drugs they had, we do this one called Taxotere that I did, and you have to keep your hands in like water with ice. So it's an ice bath. So
right.
For an hour while it infuses, your hands are in the ice bath because it turns your fingernails black and they fall out. So by putting your hands in there, it stops the chemo from making so all my nail beds turned black, but I never lost my nails. So
you never lost them.
No, I turned yellow. You know, I was chemo yellow, and I had black fingernails. But it's like those are the things you do, right?
That should be a Halloween costume.
Oh Jesus!
The chemo glow.
Chemo glow.
You just paint yourself yellow and dip your fingernails in black ink. I think that'd be great. No, I'd go as it. I could go as it right now.
I'll be curious for you how. If you bring this journey into your comedy and how that will like, and I think maybe that will be when you're on the other side of it and can.
Well, it'd be insane for me not to. The amount, you know, and I've been trying to do as much writing as possible.
Okay, good.
And yeah, like that's definitely like the only thing that like kind of keeps me sane when I was in the hospital was writing.
Okay.
But just for the, you know, the experience and the storytelling alone, I think it would be silly for me not to talk about it and for my own healing process. But for the amount of times I've been sitting in a bed and I've farted and then I've had to take my bare hand and check and make sure I didn't shit myself. The amount of times I've done that because I was so because I couldn't trust any fart during cancer, it would be silly for me not to talk about that.
Well, I remember because I used to pee my pants. That was one of the things that chemo made me, you know, you couldn't get to the bathroom half time. But then one day that happened to me and I was like, I said, that's great. I've shit my pants now. It's all coming to the world. It's like there was no dignity left, right?
There's no more. There's no more regression. There's no more regression. Like, you lost your hair.
Yeah, I was bald. I had no boob.
Yeah.
I was peeing my pants. And then one day I shit my pants. So I was like, I don't think it can get any worse than this.
No, it definitely can't.
It doesn't. It was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, absolutely.
I bypassed the shit the pants, but it that didn't happen. I pooped my pants.
Luckily, I haven't pooped myself yet, but there has been so many close calls and where I am so worried because when I'm my biggest fear is that when I'm sleeping next to your daughter that I accidentally shit on her. That is my biggest fear. In our white duvet. I'm sure you'll find it funny, but that is my biggest fear for sure.
I'm not sure how funny Alice is going to find it.
She won't find it funny at all because
no, she
nothing,
won't.
No, nothing about my poops are normal already. So I think
it'll be
a disaster.
It's weird because it strips you down of all your dignity, right? It's just like nothing is, you're just, it is what it is. So it's like, I just, that was a funny memory for me. I just remember going, for Jesus' sakes.
Oh, every day I just look at myself and I'm like, look how silly you look. It's like, it just doesn't matter now. Like just like when I lost my hair, I was a little nervous about it, or like before it happened, I was nervous about it. And then the other day I saw myself in the mirror and I was like, look how ridiculous you look. Like I just like laughed about it because I was like, you just look like you look like an incomplete person, and it's silly, and it's okay to laugh at it, you know.
Yeah, I remember like, when I lost my hair. It was like it's a real experience because I was preparing for it, but
right
the day it came out, I looked like I had been in Chernobyl. because it was just patches everywhere, and it wasn't what I expected. It's not. I just thought all this stuff is just going to flow out of my hair, and it's not.
They just kind of tell you that it's going to fall out, but they don't really tell you what that feels like. Like when it was until you explained to me that like the pins and needles kind of thing, where like
hair follicles are just sitting in your scalp. They're just sitting there.
I could feel every individual hair in my head.
Yeah.
And then it was until like a day after that when I could just start picking it out. And then I was picking it out like crazy because I was like, well, if it's going to be in here, I want it gone. Like,
yeah, I know.
Like I didn't want it there anymore. Like I was almost excited.
I have to tell you, like on a serious side, like I had long hair, so I cut it off and then I bobbed it. Then I did a number two or something. I don't know what it was, but I took it down. So basically I just had stubble everywhere. It was, you know, it was cool or whatever. And I thought, well, that'll be the easiest.
Yeah. But
the day it fell out, I was in the bathroom taking a shower and it was just coming off in clumps in my hands and I lost it. It was probably I was here by myself and it was probably one of the hardest days. And I sat on the floor and I cried because it was the first time I looked like I had cancer.
Right. That's exactly it. It's until the treatment starts that you feel like you have it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And when my hair fell out, that was the real kick in the pants for me. And I was like, that day I cried and cried and cried and I hadn't cried a lot.
Yeah.
And
you were trying to make it easier. You were trying to.
And I thought I had done everything to prepare myself. But when that hair fell out and I just had patches all over my head and I looked in the mirror and I was a bit yellow and I had one boob and I thought, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing. You just look at yourself and like, look at you. You look ridiculous, but it's okay. And it's okay to look at yourself and laugh about it and kind of
see that.
Yeah, it's okay to cry. That's the thing, is to feel those emotions is like, it's important. It's really important.
And it just proved to me that I could do all the preparing I needed, but you know, emotionally there's no guarantee what that's going to look like or how you're going to respond. And it's okay that I lost my shit that day. Maybe I needed to lose my shit that day.
You most likely did need to
to lose my shit that day.
Yeah.
So it was fine, but it was, oh my,
that's the best. Well, how are you feeling right now, Sandra? Are you feeling good?
I'm good. I'm glad you invited me to come on and have a chat with you. You know, I think,
are you you ready for a little rapid fire maybe?
Sure.
Yeah, you feeling okay though? You I feel like we covered a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that was a good talk, and I mean,
yeah,
I have to tell you how grateful I am to be here and know you during this, because of all the things that I mean, you'd only been in our life for a year or so. I think it's been a year and a bit,
it's been two since been March.
Two, yeah. So you were just in our life like 2 years with Eilish.
Yeah.
We've already, I feel like, become a family. We're all very attached
absolutely
to each other.
Well, thank you. That means the world to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you knew that right from the beginning, like the first time we met you.
We've had the best adventures and been on the best trips, and we've already done the best stuff.
We met in the Dominican Republic. What more do you want?
Exactly.
So, but it's been really emotionally difficult for us to want to be with family and know we can't. And I hope, I'm honored to be part of your family now.
Thank you, Sandra. I appreciate it. And I'm honored to have you during this. I've like really appreciated what you've done for me during this, and for you and Pat have done for me.
Yeah,
you know, you guys.
I mean, all we do is care, right? And so having those conversations, like I tell you things, I don't know if they're appropriate or not when it comes to my journey.
No, it's all good. No, it's completely like you just said, like, you know, when you're kind of just stripped down.
Yep.
As a human. Like, it's not about whether it's appropriate or not anymore. Like, you got to talk about it. You have to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to make sure, because, you know, there are people who will be listening to your podcast. Not everybody has a partner, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend.
Exactly.
That's going to be able to sit down and talk to you about it.
No, of course.
Probably may not emotionally be able to deal with it themselves. So you owe it to yourself to find those people that can listen
absolutely
to you And you can have those. That's a gift that you do for yourself.
Well, that's why I'm so lucky to have, I'm so lucky to have Eilish.
Yes.
She's the best. Yes. So and thank you for letting me, for allowing me to date her and love her. Because she's my best friend.
Yeah. Well, knowing Eilish, we wouldn't have a choice, even if we didn't like her.
That's me. I love that. She's a strong-willed lady.
Yes, she is.
She is. She's a strong woman. And that's that's that.
Yeah, that's that.
And that's that. So yeah, we'll get the rapid fire going.
Okay.
Favorite thing about Newfoundland.
Well, if to tell you the truth right now, it's the times, like I live downtown, so it's supposed to be rapid fire. The whales are around now, so everybody's chasing the whales around. And so when Newfoundland is lovely like that, it's a really lovely time to be here.
Now, I think I know the answer to this one, but least favorite part about Newfoundland?
Sometimes the weather. I mean, anybody even that lives here, it's like today was sunny and warm, but tomorrow's going to be 12 degrees. So it's like,
I love that. What was the hardest part about leaving Ontario? Because I know we didn't cover this earlier, but you know, you moved from Ontario back to Newfoundland. Yeah. What was the hardest part about leaving Ontario?
I think sometimes when you make big moves, you underestimate the growing that you did where you were. So I was in Ottawa for 20 years before we came home to Newfoundland.
Right.
And I left Newfoundland when I was 18. So I actually was away. So I forgot that I had made roots, really deep roots in Ottawa, and I thought it was okay to leave. And I left a little piece of my heart when I left there. So, you know, that's the difficulty. Alice was born in Ottawa. Yeah, there was a lot of things, but you know, you grow another piece of your heart when you move to Newfoundland. And if you ask me what I love about Newfoundland, it'd have to be the interconnectivity that I have here with people that I care about.
Well, I agree with that right away. Like, that's how I felt when I went to Newfoundland.
Yeah. The people the bar none.
When Eilish and I only came up for like 10 days, and when I left, I had a really hard time leaving. I think it's one of the best places on earth.
Yeah, there's something special about it. We really don't like the weather, but there's something special about the province and the people, and that keeps you here. So yeah.
What is your favorite vacation spot?
Oh, well, anywhere with a beach. Anywhere with a beach. Well, Newfoundland has some nice beaches, as I'm seeing, because it's all staycation this year.
Right.
But we did have fun frolicking in Kaya Koko recently, didn't we?
Absolutely.
In the last year,
those beaches are really nice. I love those beaches.
Those beaches are really nice. Yeah. So that's one of my favorite things to do is go down the Caribbean.
Go to a beach. Yeah. Favorite food?
Oh, freaking pasta.
Pasta. Absolutely.
I think
You and your daughter.
Oh, geez. I love pasta. And, you know, people say, oh, you shouldn't be eating all those carbs. Like, freak that. Italy, they all eat that pasta. It's good for you.
Well, I eat bread
pasta
by the pound.
Pasta is good for you. It's good for the soul.
Yeah. Favorite dessert?
I love these, like, Napoleons. They're like flaky pasta, flaky pastry with, like, the cream, the cream in between. I dies for those. Napoleons. Yeah, they're like a milfieu, like a that kind of thing. Yes, they're
sound some good. All right, so I have two more questions left, okay? Now these ones aren't super rapid, but if you had one piece of advice for anyone who is diagnosed with cancer, what would it be?
To tell you the truth, the gift I gave myself was to learn about my disease and empower yourself with every single bit of knowledge that you can about the disease that you have, because people are afraid of cancer. The word cancer scares the shit out of people, and it should, but the more you are, and the easier your journey will be, because you won't be as afraid. Because, you know, it's sort of picking away the pieces of learning that, you know, I might be okay. I can get through this, you know, and to So knowledge is power when it comes to cancer. Don't believe that you just leave it to the doctors. Find out about your stuff. You have that great app. Is it the UHN?
The UHN, yeah. So the UHN app
is amazing. We don't have that down in Newfoundland. That is a gift. Look at every test result on it. Yeah. Ask questions if you don't know how to read them.
When I that's the thing is like everything that I do understand, I have at my fingertips. Everything that I don't understand, I bring up to my doctors or my nurses. Like it's been incredible, and it's made me feel like I actually have a say in what's going on, and I actually have kind of a little bit more control, which has been
Well, control. You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah,
it's about having some sense of control when the world feels like it's spinning off its axis when you have cancer. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the final question, because this is the Mr. Friendship podcast.
Okay.
What is your favorite memory of our friendship?
You know, Jacob, like Alish was going out with you, and then it wasn't until I think November that we met you. So she started going out with you. So we didn't meet you until like the following November. And I just remember from the moment that Patrick and I met you, it felt like we were a family. So it's like there was an instant friendship. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I 100%.
You meet somebody and it's like you've always known them.
Absolutely.
I'll always remember that because it was the most natural thing that ever happened was, you know, it's kind of nerve wracking when you go down, you're going to meet your girlfriend's parents in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, absolutely.
And you've never met them.
And when all you want is for them to like you.
Yes. And it's,
that's the scary thing, right?
And that is a great memory. I mean, how much fun did we have playing
that
air hockey and scat and we just embraced each other on a whole, and you know, it helped me reconnect with my daughter again as well, which is a gift because, I mean, she's been gone since she's 18. We live in Newfoundland and we go back and forth and see each other. But, I mean, when your child leaves you at 18, like I did with my mom, you know, there's a little piece of you that's gone.
Yeah, of course.
I think, you know, your friendship with us and your relationship with us has helped bring that connectivity even closer with her being so far away. So,
That makes me really happy to hear because, you know, I feel so close to you guys. And every time that, you know, we're together, it's literally nothing but fun times.
Yeah. And it was like you were always meant to be. This was always meant to be. It was almost.
Well, that makes me really happy because I love your daughter with all my heart. So
I know you do. You're going to make me cry, Jake.
No, don't cry. You're going to make me cry.
Oh, you guys are, you know, there's a special connection there. And Patrick and I felt that immediately when we met. So because you love her, we love you.
Oh, and I love you guys.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm all teary-eyed now.
Me too.
Stop it.
Enough of that now.
No, enough of that.
Well, do you feel good?
Yeah, I do. I really appreciate you getting me on to talk. It was actually good for me to do a little trial run because I'd like to really follow it because you gave me a great mic.
Yeah.
Gave me this mic to start my podcast and I haven't done it and I'm not sure what's holding me back. I feel like these kind of conversations would really help. And I think
it's important.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's for you or whether it's for other people, you know, it's all important, and cancer unfortunately isn't stopping anytime soon. So,
and people are listening to podcasts. So you getting your shit out there is very important. And I'm so proud of you for continuing to do it through your treatment.
Thank you, Sandra.
It takes energy to do this.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to go pass out after this.
No, I know you are. So we're going to wrap it up here now.
Oh, it's all good. Well, thank you for doing this, Sandra. That means the world to me. Well, I know. I hope you know I love you and I appreciate you. And
yes, and I really appreciate. And I hope your listeners get one little piece out of something that we talked about tonight.
Oh, I think they will.
Okay.
All right. You feel good?
Yes, this is good.
All right, this is great. We did it. We did it. We had laughs, we had tears, we had poo. We had everything I needed in a good podcast.
Both shit our pants. So it was all good.
Hell yeah. All right, Sandra.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye, Jacob.
Bye, Sandra. I love you.
I love you too. Bye.